What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, two big moves in Washington.
For the life of me, cannot understand this.
The Democrats' latest deal, Arizona's Kyrsten Sinema killing a chance to close a major tax loophole for Wall Street that will move the giant Inflation Reduction Act forward.
I had great, I love Manchin and Sinema. Now, I mean, they're both dead to me, sort of. Kidding. I'm kidding a little bit.
And the long-awaited CHIPS Act finally heading to President Biden's desk. Senator Maria Cantwell on the importance to the new economy.
Then I think Americans were like, no, no, no. This is as essential as wheat.
Monkeypox is now a U.S. health emergency, former FDA head Scott Gottlieb.
When doctors see patients presenting with unusual cases of what they presume to be shingles, or they presume to be herpes, they're now going to have to start testing for monkeypox as well.
And all the stories wrapping up a busy news week. Jobs, visa in the hot seat, with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin, the toasts of Washington.
You love us equally.
I like the back and forth.
You do?
You're a good team. You're the odd couple, okay?
It's Friday, August 5th, 2022. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Andrew by in 3, 2, 1. Cue Andrew.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kernan. Becky's off today. We've got a big Friday for you, Joe, right? I mean, this is going to be something, and a lot of news as well.
First up, a pulse check on our economy by way of American employment. According to the Labor Department, the U.S. added a whopping 528,000 jobs in July, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 3.5%. That's the lowest level in nearly 50 years.
Well, that job number is terrific. It's very difficult to say we're in a recession with that many jobs, but really that is the story to discuss.
That was our own Rick Santelli reading the data this morning, and he's right. The story still really is, are we in a recession? Debatable. And if we are, what kind of recession is this? Two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, but the fastest pace of job growth since February? The economy is sending us mixed signals, but at least today's signals are promising ones.
Fallout this morning from House Speaker Pelosi's controversial visit to Taiwan. China now announcing countermeasures, including canceling meetings between U.S. and China defense officials and suspending cooperation on anti-drug efforts, climate change, and illegal immigration. Now, China also said it would impose sanctions on Speaker Pelosi and her immediate family. We're going to try to get more details on this as we get them. It's literally coming over as we're speaking right now. So a lot going on there, and the provocation appears to have been real.
It's so bizarre, isn't it? So it's live fire, but isn't it odd? They're just firing off into woo, just firing stuff. It's not hitting anything, right? But it's live fire. It's like I wouldn't know how to run a country. I wouldn't. I don't know how to. Oh, it's obvious that I wouldn't know how. But so they're firing a bunch of live stuff into the strait so that you can see it happening, and there's smoke. But what are you doing? Are you saying we may aim it at you eventually? Or what's the point? Is that what the point is?
It's to provoke. But I think the larger issue is there are real issues that we have in the United States where we actually do have to cooperate with China, whether we want to or not, whether it's on drugs and pharmaceutical issues or on climate issues. I mean, there are real issues that we do have to communicate with them about, right, and have some form of a relationship.
They got to get over it, because congressional people have been going for since the beginning of time over there. So get over it. Nothing happened. If they're going to do it,
their position is ridiculous and makes no sense to me. And is that's not the issue. I think the question is,
we talk about virtue signaling.
Was this trip a just one big virtue signal?
No,
right?
To appease or not to appease. That is the to appease dictators and
I don't want to appease these
autocracy.
People. I'm on television every day asking CEOs whether they should do business in China.
No, to appease or not to appease. Well, we're never going to stop doing business in China or Saudi Arabia. So we all need to, you know, relax.
Well, okay, so now you're okay, so which is it?
I go all over the place.
So we've got an update now to an important story we've been following all week. Visa and MasterCard are now cutting ties with MindGeek, that's the parent company of Pornhub. In a page-long statement on Thursday, Visa chairman and CEO Al Kelly saying Visa is now suspending card acceptance privileges on the advertising arm of MindGeek. Quote, Visa cards will not be able to be used to purchase advertising on any sites, including Pornhub or other MindGeek-affiliated sites. Kelly also said Visa, quote, suspended sites that contained user-generated content in December 2020, and acceptance on those sites has not been reinstated. And MasterCard also taking action within 10 minutes of Visa publishing their statement. MasterCard saying, quote, new facts from last week's court ruling made us aware of advertising revenue outside of our view that appears to provide Pornhub with indirect funding. This step will further enforce our decision on December 2020 to terminate the use of our products on that site. This action, all following that ruling on Friday by a district judge denying Visa's motion to be removed from a lawsuit facing MindGeek over child pornography on its site, Pornhub, and pressure, including on this program, from investor Bill Ackman.
There have been hearings in Canada, around the world, people doing their best to shut down these companies. And the ultimate regulator is actually Visa, right? Visa tomorrow could shut down MindGeek. A board has an obligation to have a monitoring system in place to make sure that that product or service is not causing harm. In this case, of course, the payment system being used for illegal activity, which is enabling child trafficking.
I think it's nice to see that Al Kelly's done what I think arguably was the right thing in this case. I should say that Al Kelly's statement says that they plan to defend the case vigorously, that they do not believe that they're in the wrong, but they are taking these additional steps now.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot. What's today, Friday? When was that?
But I think one of the things, it's interesting, now that Visa's accepting and MasterCard's accepting that advertising that supports something that might be illegal is a problem, This gets to the question of how these financial services companies, you know, what their responsibilities are when it comes to different merchants and what merchants do. And this can go, you know, run the gamut of different types of illegal activity and what kind of policing they need to
Egregious, you know, and we're talking about something that's so, you know, when you hear about it, obviously, but so you want Visa to police any place that sells a fake Coach bag?
Well, I mean, I think there's questions about who you're doing business with, right? I mean, there's a know your customer
law. How many people do they have, Visa and MasterCard? They're not going to all 20 gazillion places. And, you know, people have brought up, saying, what if the pizza place is owned by the mob? And I shouldn't say pizza. What if the Chinese restaurant is owned by, I'm not, you know, trying to stigmatize where it comes from, but there's stuff everywhere that, I don't know, there's a whole underground economy, Andrew, that Visa and MasterCard can't possibly police it. And there's laws against it that should be. And then we'll get to the Second Amendment stuff. It should be illegal stuff. I mean, you've suggested doing it for stuff that's not even illegal.
Well, no, I'll give you the equivalent is there are stores, unfortunately, in America, gun stores in America, that are responsible and have been flagged and fined.
No, you said this before.
And in certain cases, there's been arrests. No, on certain stores where illegal activity has clearly taken place. I mean, lots of illegal, repeated events of illegal activity.
Look, it's summed up in the slippery slope.
You could argue that they should get shut down.
You said you weren't going to go the slippery slope. You said you just want it with the MindGeek and you weren't going to do the slippery slope where everything in the world needs to be policed by Visa and MasterCard. Now, here you are slipping halfway down the slope again. Don't slip down the slope on a Friday.
My question is, what do you think the responsibility of these companies should be? That's all I'm asking.
Cheese will be next.
Next, Washington deal-making. We're looking at the two key pieces of legislation that may kickstart the president's domestic agenda. Build Back Better 2.0's maybe late save from Arizona's centrist Senator Kyrsten Sinema.
For the life of me, cannot understand this. I cannot. I don't get it. I wonder, does she get it? Does she understand?
And Senator Maria Cantwell joins us on the imminent law to make more microchips right at home.
The information age is going to continue to unfold, and the United States has to lead in the next generation chips.
Squawk Pod will be right back.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Today on the podcast, we're featuring two sweeping pieces of legislation, one that's just across the finish line and the other in the final horse trading moments. The Chips and Science Act, which will provide billions of dollars to the semiconductor industry in the United States, will be signed into law by President Joe Biden early next week. This bill had a long road. The president pushed Congress to consider passage a matter of national security to make us more competitive globally, particularly against China, the current leader in chip production. The House and the Senate passed the bill with near total Democratic support.
With our Chips and Science Act, we send to President Biden bold new investments to lower costs for America's families while protecting their financial future.
One-third of Republican senators voted for the CHIPS Act, as well as about two dozen Republicans in the House. But other GOP lawmakers withdrew support late in the game when another spending package, a sort of cousin legislative piece of the president's domestic agenda, emerged from Senate Democrats. That sweeping bill, dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, comes from a deal between Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. It includes hundreds of billions of dollars in spending on energy, healthcare, and climate initiatives while taxing corporations. Senators, normally heading home for August vacation, are working this weekend to hammer out the final details and vote. Last night, a key Democratic swing vote. Senator Kyrsten Sinema said she will support it. She's a yes, ending a week of a Washington waiting game. This was Joe Manchin on CNBC earlier this week.
We had a good conversation, Sarah. I'm not going to say any more than that because, you know, she does her own homework and she looks at the bill and looks at the content, and she'll make her decision and give her reason for making her decision, I'm sure.
The Arizona senator said her support required one major change to the revenue side of the bill. She doesn't want to see the end of what's become known as the carried interest loophole, a huge part of compensation for many on Wall Street. Some fund managers and private equity investors take their share of profits from deals or transactions as part of their work. And if they hold on to them for a few years, the profits are taxed as investment income, a much lower rate than, say, the tax on an average American worker's salary, allowing the richest of the rich to get more take-home cash. And it's not without controversy. Joe and Andrew take this developing story from here.
To the revenue side of the bill, Lon Mooy joins us now from Washington. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Joe. Democrats have struck a deal with Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema that could cement the 50 votes needed to pass their new tax and spending bill. Sinema got Democrats to drop any changes to carried interest in exchange for her support. Instead, two sources tell me Democrats plan to impose a new 1% excise tax on stock buybacks to make up that lost revenue. Now, the carried interest provision would have raised $14 billion. The Joint Committee on Taxation projected a previous version of that stock buybacks tax that was passed by the House would have raised $124 billion over a decade. NBC also reports that the new 15% corporate minimum tax would still allow companies to take advantage of accelerated depreciation, and the deal would add billions of dollars in funding for drought mitigation as well. Now, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said he believed every Democrat would support this compromise, and last night, President Biden threw his support behind the proposal as well. He said, quote, "This is another critical step toward reducing inflation and the cost of living for America's families." The president urged the Senate to pass this bill as soon as possible. The Senate will reconvene on Saturday to begin voting on the bill. That process is expected to take all weekend. So, guys, final passage, assuming it happens, is not expected until Monday. Back over to you.
They're going to get in under the wire. When does recess start, Ilan?
Oh, recess was supposed to start yesterday.
So they're
right. Going to be staying in session, yeah, through the weekend. And after the Senate votes on this, assuming it passes, the House would then have to come back out of recess. They've already left Washington sometime next week in order to send it to the president's desk, Joe.
All right, Ilan. I want to talk to Andrew about this. Ilan, thank you.
You got to talk, Joe.
Andrew. Now, here's I have watched you over the years when we have these guys on that benefit from this.
Yep.
And invariably, they've gotten to the point where they're so rich that they sort of embrace a lot of progressive thinking at that point. For some reason, they all become very virtuous. Okay. Have you noticed that? But the one area where the truth comes out and where they just never change their colors, and you've pointed it out, and I'm not going to mention any names. You know who they are. They know who they are.
Yep.
But you'll hit them square in the face with the logic of this. And you've never got a single one of these virtue signaling lefty type guys to say, okay, I support you taking this away. When push comes to shove and it's their money and their tax situation, they never agree with you. And they always come up with something like, well, you know, we've got the greatest economy in the world here. Why should we tweak anything here or there? I don't know if anything will really go wrong, but it's so good, right? What we do with companies where we, you know, they need to be, private equity needs to come in and streamline these. And without this, it just might, on the margin, it might not be as easy to do. But all of them. And do you know who I'm talking about? Do you want me to mention that? Well, we don't need to mention any names, but I've watched
you. Mention them by name if you like.
No,
it's
I don't
fine.
Want to. Do you remember? You mentioned some.
I remember every
one guy. Redid the Washington Monument.
Yep. I know where you're going with this.
I don't want to go there.
What?
I'm just saying it's really weird. And who got to Kirsten Sinema?
But
who
so that's what I want to know.
Who got to her? Donors. Donors. She's got her campaign coffers probably benefit.
Yeah, but what makes no sense. Look, this bill I think is probably a good bill. I don't know. So I understand why she may want to vote in favor of the bill. The overall bill. What I don't understand, she's based in Arizona. In Arizona, this carried interest, the impact of carried interest on her constituents is like zilch, like practically nothing.
So
Senator Schumer in New York.
So then why?
Senator Schumer in New York is more impacted in terms of his constituency, given the number of private equity and real estate and everybody else who'd be affected by this. I, for the life of me, cannot understand this. I cannot. I don't get it.
See, I knew I had
wonder,
to
does she get it? Does she understand? I mean, oftentimes I will tell
she's
you that
smart.
So many of these private
it's
equity
not that
folks.
Hard.
No, I like to think she's smart, but a lot of these private equity folks do a sort of jujitsu thing where they try to tell you that somehow it's going to impact their investments, which it will absolutely have no impact on whatsoever, because it has to do with the pay the private equity
just the other
executive,
day.
Not the limited partner who's putting up the money.
Just the other day, you asked Bill Ackman about it, and he said, I think if people are, I don't know, he gave the pat answer for why it's something that it's.
No, but I think Bill Ackman. No, Bill Ackman is against it. Is against.
He is. Oh, I thought he said that it helps. No,
Ackman's against it. People like Jamie Dimon are against it. Bob Rubin are against it. I mean, you go down the list of people.
Those guys
don't. They don't, but they're in the business. Those are their clients. You would think if they would be incentivized to carry their water, they're carrying less water than cinema is carrying for them. So the whole thing makes no sense whatsoever. Unless somebody's being bought off or has some,
maybe it was somebody else.
I don't even know what to think.
But somebody else the other day said that if they're willing to, and it didn't make sense because it sounded like he was talking about his own skin. And if we're gonna take a risk, long term risk, then we should be. But
totally.
How about this? Would you prefer? Do you like it that they're making it up? See, I'd rather get rid of the carried interest and not do the buyback. I where I stand on buybacks. If that's something that a company decides is that's the way they want to, they want their income or their balance sheet to look a certain way.
Right.
Outstanding shares, not outstanding issue more.
You and I are probably in more agreement. I have a stronger view, as you know,
on carried
about carried interest,
in the
which
airline
I just
stuff.
Think is one of the most disgusting, gross. Terrible loop. It's just obvious, glaring. It's like a loop. It's just there for everybody to see. And she has now shown her colors and who she is to decide that's the one thing that has to come out of this bill. That's the thing?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't even understand it. I sit here and just marvel at what's happening.
I had great. I love Manchin and Sinema. Now, I mean, they're both dead to me, sort of. Kidding. I'm kidding a little bit, but to a lot of people, that's the way it was. It was like, wow, I don't know about Joe Manchin's future in West Virginia at this point, in a state where Joe Biden has a 17% approval rating. But, you know, people got to do what they got to do. Got to do what they got to
do. But what does she do? Tell me what she's doing. I mean,
why do you think I ask you about it? I just like when these guys come on and they just twist themselves into pretzels explaining why they're the most... I mean, they raise money, they're philanthropic, they're so, they embrace every woke, everything that needs to be done to get invited to all the parties in Manhattan. They do it all. And then when it comes to carried interest, they're like, whoa, and they already got billions.
Billions. What does cinema have on, what do they have on cinema?
I don't know.
I mean, honestly.
If we could find a way for you
going on in the state of Arizona,
if we could do the airline bailout issue with the carried interest, you might explode. Your entire head might. I mean, if we could put those two things together, those are your two, right?
I'm baffled this morning. I'm baffled.
Right.
I can't even.
How do we go 10 minutes on this? I guess we can do that with our eyes closed. Right.
Give me 3 hours. Let's go.
We heard from Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell this week on Squawk Box. She offered some background on the negotiations, the pushing along and pulling along needed in Congress to get major legislation passed, in this case, the CHIPS Act. As chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, Cantwell held classified briefings to ensure her fellow lawmakers understood the national security and economic implications of the U.S. semiconductor shortage. She says these meetings are ultimately what led to Republicans getting on board. The senator joined us from the very active and maybe a little noisy rotunda of the U.S. Capitol. Let's get back to Andrew.
Good morning to you. We appreciate you being with us. Let's talk about this bill because there's been lots of controversy, bipartisan agreement in the end to move forward. But on both sides of the extremes of the Republican and Democratic parties, there were folks who said, why are we subsidizing this industry? And so I will start there.
Well, we just had this conversation on your show about where is the economy of the future. And as a business person, former business person, I can tell you, when times are uncertain, you basically think about what is your core investment and what do we need to do moving forward. One thing is very clear. The United States needed to invest in chips and science so that our advanced manufacturing was competitive in a global economy. And so we're sending that bill to the president's desk, and he'll be signing it on Tuesday. So we're now asking states to prepare to train and skill a workforce so we can be the leader in design and manufacturing of advanced chips. And I think you know very well how important that is to new products, to services, and national security.
What are we going to do to hold companies that get these subsidies to account? And I asked because we've seen, I mean, there is a laundry list of companies that have gotten subsidies from taxpayers over the years, Foxconn being just one example, Solyndra being another, where people look and say, you know what, they didn't live up to their side of the bargain, and this was wasted dollars.
Well, in this case, we already know from estimates by CBO and GAO that the investment we're making now, within 5 years, will be paid back and doubled. But we have a commerce secretary who has the ability in this legislation to claw back funds from these companies. When you think about chip manufacturing and fabrication, it cost about $20 billion to build one of these facilities. And so we have shrunk from 36% of the market down to 12. And if we do nothing, we'll continue to shrink to the point where the United States is just not a competitive place to make this huge technology advancement. So the notion that we have to be competitive on an international basis, there was just no choice. Now we have to make sure that these provisions, where we're generating some incentive to make this manufacturing move really encapsulate here in the United States, that we will be watching. And the language that says you can't develop other places, you can't do stock buybacks for a period of time, this is what will help make this legislation successful.
What do you make of the rumblings that we're hearing that some of these chip companies are going to be asking for even more, not necessarily from the federal government, though maybe, but from states and others?
Well, it is an interesting dilemma, given where Korea and Taiwan and other places have been, and now Europe, in incenting this sector. But we know this, we need millions of jobs in this area. When you think about the ancillary impacts to, say, the automotive industry or the electronics industry or the grid itself. So we know that we need to skill and train people here in the United States. But the science part of this bill gives ample investment through the National Science Foundation for that workforce training and skilling to happen. What we're looking for is partners on the ground, universities, states, organizations, business organizations, who want to train and skill those to do chip fabrication as fast as possible.
When people think about industrial policy, one of the questions that comes up is, if in fact the companies that are on our screen are wildly successful, and we have to hope that they are wildly successful, there is going to be a moment, potentially, and I'm curious what you would think, if we go back and look at the value creation that's been created at those companies for their shareholders, whether taxpayers are supposed to look at that and say, that's great, that's what we wanted all along, or we should have had a piece of that.
Well, I just was asked by The Economist the other day, what did I think would make the decision about whether this was successful? And I still believe is whether the United States will be leading in the design of chip fabrication for the future. The design is everything. And we're at a point where we're not saying Moore's Law is over, but it's getting trickier to add the complexity and to reduce the power costs to all the things that we are trying to do. Just look at automobiles and AI. You have to have sensors all over the place. You have to interpret that so you can have driverless cars. Chips are a key part of that. Or look at Qualcomm and what they're doing with 5G. So the information age is going to continue to unfold, and the United States has to lead in the next generation chips that are going to allow those advancements to take place. If we do that, the rest of this, we will see many, many, many job growth numbers. And right now we're seeing these companies, you'll be having them on your show, that are going to be announcing right. expansions in the next month.
Where's the line, though, for you? And when I say where's the line, there's going to be other companies from other industries that I imagine are going to start knocking on your door saying, you know what? What about us? We're clearly important to national security issues our country.
Yeah. It's tricky for sure, Andrew, and if you want to have me back sometime and have a big, big discussion about this, I'm happy to come on board, because obviously I heard everything you said about the airlines during our airline situation, but I would say that, you know, that paid a dividend. We are further ahead of Europe and everybody else because we put something in place in a short period of time. Did I want to do it just that way? No, but all of us got together here and made a decision, and it is paying dividends for the United States and the growth that we're seeing in the economy and the rebound. So that was a smart policy. In this particular example, yes, our hand is being forced by the fact that, let's just say, for example, Intel or others did not make the right R&D investment decisions and fell behind. And all of a sudden, Korea and Taiwan put their foot on the gas. And basically, all of a sudden, we look up and we're way behind as it relates to manufacturing. So we had to make a decision. But what I think Americans woke up to in the supply chain crisis, when they couldn't get appliances, when they couldn't get a car, when inflation right now is being driven by the fact that people can't even get a used car, then I think Americans were like, no, 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 this is as essential as wheat. We want to make an investment. We want it made here in the United States. And we want to be the leaders in the next generation of technology. I think the response from Americans, they're getting excited. They like competition. They like to be in the fight. And this bill is giving them the tools to do so.
Senator Cantwell, we appreciate you joining us. We appreciate you being such an astute watcher of Squawk, given that you know about our views about airlines. And we hope to have you back to have a larger conversation about all of it. Thanks.
I'm serious. It's an important discussion. I don't really believe that this is an industrial policy. This is about a smart investment. And so I'm so glad the president's going to be signing it on Tuesday.
Well, we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.
Senator, do you love us equally? Andrew, and me, do you have a preference?
Yes.
You love us equally. See how that works?
I like the back and forth.
You do?
I like the back and forth.
You really don't, it's not 51-49 or anything. It's exactly 50-50 for the love of
Well, some days, you know, one of you scores better than the other, but you know, you're a good team. You're the odd couple, okay? You're like, you make it work every day with a juxtaposition.
I can stand Jack Klugman, I think. I don't know if you're okay with Tony Randall or not, Andrew, but Senator, thank you, and thanks for watching. And that's what politicians know how to do. That was really good, 50-50, Sorkin. You were hoping, weren't you?
Yep.
You were hoping she'd say, Andrew is.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, monkeypox. How is it spreading, and how much of a risk does it pose? Answering your healthcare emergency questions with Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
I think that's partly why we've seen cases go up rapidly, is because a lot of those were either backlogs or people who are getting tested now for monkeypox because doctors are now starting to suspect that infection. So I think case growth is probably going to slow here in the United States.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
This is Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe, in 3, 2, 1, his mic, cue.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Biden administration has declared the monkeypox outbreak a national health emergency, sounding the alarm over the growing number of cases across the U.S. Joining us now, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner and a CNBC contributor. He also serves on the boards of Pfizer and Illumina. And getting to this point, Doctor, it sounds bad. It is bad. But do we need to temper our pessimism? Because we've just been through something that obviously with COVID, was that a whole different situation that we saw than what we're seeing now? We need to be aware of this, but I don't think we're going to shut down schools anytime soon, are we?
Well, that's certainly true. This represents a whole different level of risk. I think that this is more akin to what we faced with Zika, where you have the potential for a slow-moving infection that becomes endemic. It becomes a fact of life, and you get a new infection that you have to worry about, but it's going to be a low-level infection. This is not going to be a raging epidemic like you saw with COVID, certainly. I think the risk right now is that this starts to get a foothold here in the United States if it hasn't already. It's spreading right now as a sexually transmitted disease, but it's not a sexually transmitted disease, so it's going to start to spread outside those social networks. And you just see this as a low-level threat. And going forward, when doctors see patients presenting with unusual cases of what they presume to be shingles, or they presume to be herpes, they're now going to have to start testing for monkeypox as well. But you're right, this isn't going to spread widely and rapidly. But the risk is that this becomes just another pathogen that we need to deal with. And that's unfortunate. It didn't need to be that way. If we had acted aggressively early, we could have potentially snuffed this out.
So a pathogen, but there's been no, the mortality is what? The mortality is zero, or is it, what is it?
Yeah, look, in West Africa, where this has predominantly spread previously, the mortality was 3-4%, but the strain that spread in that region was presumed to be more virulent. Right now, we haven't seen any deaths. We have seen hospitalizations as a consequence of people getting sick with the virus, but we have not seen any deaths. So hopefully it remains that way. But this still is a pathogen. At least here in the United States, we haven't seen deaths. But this still is a pathogen that in an immunocompromised individual, in a young child, in a pregnant woman, can be dangerous. And so this represents a certain amount of risk. It's certainly not on the order of what we see from other viruses, and certainly not similar to its close cousin smallpox, but it's still risky to people who are vulnerable to it.
Well, close cousin of smallpox, that sort of leads me to the next question, and the chances that some type of evolution of this thing into either something more infectious or more virulent, is there enough spread right now to where there's an incubation of enough of these where that could actually happen?
Yeah, look, we've seen it already evolve. Like I said, it has evolved in a direction of becoming less virulent from the clade that was spreading in West Africa. It's a DNA virus. It replicates through DNA, so it's more stable, certainly, than the viruses that replicate through RNA, like COVID or influenza. But it does have the potential to evolve over time in certain directions. Right now, it has evolved in the direction of being less serious. It could evolve backwards back into the direction of being a more serious infection. But so far, the cases we've seen here, a lot of them have been milder. And that's why it's been hard to diagnose this, because people aren't presenting with the typical disseminated rash that you've seen historically. They're presenting with isolated lesions that are becoming confused for zoster infections, shingles, or herpes. I personally know a number of physicians who've diagnosed patients with shingles who didn't presume to have any risk factors for monkeypox. They didn't resolve with conventional treatment for herpes, for zoster, and then they re-presented, got tested, and turned out to have monkeypox. I think that's partly why we've seen cases go up rapidly, is because a lot of those were either backlogs, people who couldn't get tested because testing wasn't available, or people who are getting tested now for monkeypox because doctors are now starting to suspect that infection. So I think case growth is probably going to slow here in the United States.
Hey, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, I'm very curious. I want to pivot the conversation back to COVID for a moment, and in particular, President Biden's rebound case after taking Paxlovid. We've talked a lot about rebound cases with you about Paxlovid, and you've always said it's a very small and tiny number of folks. It's more anecdotal than real. And yet here we have the president suffering for the same fate. What do you think of that? And do you think that there has to be a longer course? Some doctors have said there should be a longer course of Paxlovid instead of taking it for 5 days. Maybe you should take it for 10.
Well, look, I've certainly never said it's more anecdotal than real. There is a certain percentage of people who seem to rebound from the infection, both on and off therapy. So the rate of rebound does seem to be consistent across not just the other antivirals, but also people who are untreated as well. And it appears to be about 5%. And Ashish Jha, the White House coordinator, also confirmed that on Twitter based on the real world evidence that the company Pfizer has looked at. I'm on the board of Pfizer, as you know, as well as regulators and other public health officials. It could be a little higher than that. It could be a little lower. But I think there's a perception that it's extremely high. And I don't think the data supports that. In terms of whether or not there should be a longer course of therapy, this is something that certainly is being looked at right now. Whether or not certain individuals might require a longer course of therapy, whether or not Omicron itself might require a longer course of therapy, whether or not vaccinated individuals. I do believe, though, that a lot of people who are being started on Paxlovid right now are people who are getting diagnosed very early before they really manifest significant symptoms from the virus itself. And before they do what we call seroconvert, before they start to mount their own immune reaction, because they're able to diagnose and treat themselves very early, their bodies really haven't started to produce antibodies. And that's not necessarily how the drug was studied. The drug was studied in people who had been symptomatic, I think, for 3 days on average. So the people in the clinical trial had started to mount an immune response. So if you are going to introduce the drug much earlier in the course of the illness, you may have to reevaluate how long you continue therapy. But that's going to have to be a decision the regulators make based on data that gets submitted by the manufacturer. And we'll have to wait and see about that.
Doctor, from what you know, do we know if the president took a longer course than the traditional standard course?
Yeah, look, they've been pretty candid about how they've been addressing his illness. They said he took a 5-day course. I have no reason to believe that's not the case. I think the White House has been unusually transparent how they've approached his illness.
So you believe it's just the single course?
I believe that what they said is indeed true. And they've said it was just a single 5-day course, and they didn't redose him. Once he remanifested the illness, since he wasn't very symptomatic, they didn't start him on his second course. That's my understanding of what they said. I think that they've been very clear about how they've approached it. So I believe what's coming out of the White House.
And doctor, we got to run. But the other final question is, there are people who have rebounded. And then the question is, are they contagious or not? I know he was, staying away from others out of an abundance of caution. But there seems to be a debate about that. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think if you're testing positive on an antigen test, you're contagious. You might be less contagious than you otherwise would have been because you probably have some innate immune response at that point, but you certainly have the potential to shed the virus if you're testing positive on an antigen test.
Dr. Scott Gottlieb, always great to talk to you, get your perspective on all of this. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
We got through this.
Joe,
I want to be happy about the jobs number.
So what I'm a big week of news. What a big week of news.
Big
this
week.
This was fun, sir.
Big week of news. Oh, no. What was your favorite story? The visa one? Make sure you join
us. So many. I can't even rank them.
I like Schumer working through
Hanging
cinema.
With you.
I like Schumer working through cinema to get the deal, to get the carried interest done. Make sure you join us next week.
Yeah, Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Please follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you for listening. We'll meet you right back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.